Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Well, hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And for Father's Day, we, the three of us, got to sit and chat about rugby, which is what we're about to do right now. I'm Tim, and there is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
How do you, Phil? And JB.
Hello, Tim. Now, you used to always go to me first, and then Phil, and it's kind of thrown me off my stride a bit.
Purely, I was going clockwise as I look at it on my computer screen, because we are remotely recording this. I just went, I was top right, Phil's bottom center, your top left.
I was about to say, hello, Tim, and then I had to stop myself, and then regather myself, get another breath.
I apologise.
Sounds tough.
Sorry.
Happy Father's Day all.
Yeah, we've got an incredible amount to talk about. There's loads of rugby stories. There's loads of rugby controversies. There's loads of rugby actually being played. Well, relatively, there's two games have been played, which is still loads. And But where I want to start with is on an update on where we're at with rugby a bit closer to home. Now, I believe, Phil, there's a penciled in date for the Pro 14 to return now.
There is. I read last week that they were targeting the 22nd of August, so the week after the Premiership are targeting. So in 2 months' time, we could have two full-fledged Northern Hemisphere competitions back to normal, or back to the new normal, whatever that looks like, with no crowds, crowd noise, social distancing, subs on the bench, but then no social distancing as soon as they get on the pitch, like the farce that is football at the moment, which just looks ridiculous. But yeah, we are returning to normal. And we also saw Premiership clubs this week returning to training.
Yes, we did.
To see.
Yes, we did. Now, is the Pro 14 going to resume the competition, or are they starting afresh? What's the chat?
I don't know, because one thing that would be very difficult will be the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings joining in the competition, and also just the fact that you've got obviously the UK, Ireland and Italy and South Africa, which all have varying stages of social distancing, quarantine, stopping flights and domestic travel and international travel.
I mean, obviously, I'm originally from Wales. Well, my family live in North Wales. I still cannot travel to North Wales to see them, despite it being, 80 to 60 miles to go where I need to go. I can't, I'm not supposed to cross the border. So, yeah, even those discrepancies within the UK sound pretty difficult.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. It's working its way back, I think, the finer details and all that, because logistically it is more difficult than going from, say, I don't know, Leicester to Northampton. That's a lot easier than going from, Ulster to
Bloemfontein,
yeah. Slightly more difficult.
The irony being that the only games that would get a crowd might be the only games that can happen but won't be able to have a crowd.
Yes. Yeah, the derbies.
God, it's miserable, isn't it?
There you go. But, it looks like one thing that is dead in the water is a change to the Northern Hemisphere global season in terms of club rugby, because it appears like the English and French clubs have said, absolutely no way. Are we doing that? That seems to be the response, particularly from the top 14, and it's rumoured that the Premiership clubs are much the same, which would suggest that then we might see a season resume in the middle of August, finish by end of October, and then a new season start in December and run right through to July, when the Lions are also scheduled to be touring.
Yeah, this is just going to be absolute chaos. How they finish all the fixtures and resume next year's fixtures. But bearing in mind, money is so important for rugby because they are not wealthy organisations in the first place. And particularly now, given the fact that no one's had any revenue for the last 4 months and are unlikely to get the full revenue return, well, this calendar year at least.
Hmm. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Yeah. We've also got no date, official date, for the Premiership to restart either.
Not official, no. 15th of August, as Phil mentioned, is the scheduled date.
Yeah, it's targeted, but that is contingent on all the clubs satisfactorily moving through the various different stages.
And how are they going to not move through the stages?
If there was, say, a big outbreak in one club, something like that.
If they can't organise the testing that they're happy with for players. So I don't know what's going on there, if anything, because that there's a financial cost involved in that, probably quite a significant one, I would wager.
Yeah, I think the testing is significant. And I have seen some videos and pictures of various clubs doing the testing, the swab testing, as players turned up at the ground. And then, so that's the more expensive side of it. The easier side is the thermal temperature testing as you enter, but that's not infallible.
But I wonder if this hesitancy to release the dates of the kickoff or the starting weekend is the fact that they've not finalised the situation with the players yet.
Potentially, yeah.
I think that's one of the many stumbling blocks.
Yeah, it probably is one of many.
And a little addition to what we spoke about on last week's podcast, probably worth mentioning now, which is that let's just go back a few weeks, the clubs unanimously decided to bring in a new lower salary cap to mitigate for the current situation and also preserve the integrity of the league, which was brought into disrepute through Saracens. And as far as I can tell, any club that managed to rush through new contracts for their players, and for example, Sale Sharks made a statement saying, I think Wednesday last week, one day before the deadline, they made a statement saying all their players have renegotiated reduced wage contracts. How much reduced, we don't exactly know. But the point being, any contract that was signed before last Thursday, the 18th of June, for the next however many years, 3 years, I think, only 75% of that contract counts towards the salary cap, meaning that any club who re-signed their players on new deals could spend exactly what they were spending before, but be under the new lower salary caps. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
I think the position might be a bit more nuanced on that, and more about Sale Sharks directly in a minute. But I'm sort of with you on this, which is, it's not a good look. One of the things you can obviously do here would be to say, okay, go and grab yourself a senior player, someone that you like a lot and you think is very, very valuable to your club. Say, we're going to have to give you a pay cut because everyone else is going to get one, but you're on £250,000, you're a very expensive guy, you can go on 225. Even if you accept that right now, we'll give you a long-term deal right now and you're guaranteed for 4 years. So, you know, that's what a lot of clubs, I imagine, might be looking at. Okay? So I can understand why this has been put in place. I understand why those other clubs have moved to sign their players long term. Ultimately, clubs only want what's best for the club. That's not the same as the player. And they want to win things. They need to keep the best players. The other side of this is maybe to get underneath that cap. The people that are going to suffer are the guys who are not going to get the longer deals, because they're going to have to renegotiate when there's a lot less cap space available. So if I've got a £100,000 contract, I've accepted the reduction down to £75,000, but that original contract was written, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. Does that mean that contract reduced by 25%, when we forward that, is reduced by another 25%?
So I think there'd be two separate things on that point. You'd have there was the temporary reduction, which, as I understood it, it was intended to be temporary reductions, which were signed in March, April time. These ones are basically the players are effectively signing to rip up that old contract and replace it with the new one, which says whatever it says. It might say 75k, it might say 50k instead of 100k for some of the players.
And JB, just to take your example, I'm going to say, there you go. You had a £100,000 contract. You know the situation, JB. I'm really sorry. We're having to ask everyone to do this. That temporary drop is now permanent. We can offer you £75,000 if you sign it in the next 24 hours. This is some of the tactics that's been rumoured to be being used.
Absolutely, it is.
So there you go. You've got 24 hours. The offer's off the table unless you sign it. reduce salary £75,000. But then I get that signed from you and I get it back. And then I hand it to our accounts team, our salary cap manager. Actually, we've taken a £100,000 player last season and now only 62,000 or something like that. We've had a 38% reduction in the salary. So there could be clubs, if they've been savvy, that could have more cap space, not yes. less.
Yeah, and that's the bit. So, like, we've spoken a couple of times now about one of the key strands of the Lord Miners report was about transparency, fairness, openness, and the PRL and the clubs operating in a manner that demonstrates that they're competent and that they are doing everything above board, which is not exactly how they've always done things in the past. And that was what Lord Miners set out as, like, fundamental principles for operating the league and the salary cap. And you think the clubs would read that and think, right, yeah, let's adhere to that. And they just again, they almost can't help themselves. And from my side, like, looking at this, it's so frustrating because they're actually harming the product. They're harming the public's perception of the product that they're putting out, which actually, for the short-term games of creating a loophole and fudging the salary cap, in my mind, there's a high risk of long-term harm to the value of their product. And I can only imagine what CVC are looking at this and thinking.
Yeah. So I'm going to defend it in a way, I think. I'd say this, which is there's a lot of teams out there who are not, I say a lot of teams, there's a few teams who are not in favour of reducing the salary cap. There are a lot of players out there, certainly, who are not in favour of reducing it for obvious reasons.
All of them, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are some guys, if you speak to them, that are like, well, you know, if it makes the game more sustainable, I mean, it's very magnanimous, but that's not how they should be thinking, you know.
Just on that, the only guys I can think who might be willing to accept it would be someone who's, say, 33, 34, is coming to the end of their last deal, and they're offered here's your 25% pay cut, but we'll put another 2 years on your deal.
That's exactly.
Those guys, crack on.
Everyone else is like, no, let's not do it. But ultimately, they still have to honour their contracts. And this is quite a nice little mechanism for someone like Bristol to say, look, we've got Kyle Sinclair and we've got Semi Radradra and these boys need to be paid. We've made a commitment. We can afford the commitment. We shouldn't have to say no, and we shouldn't need to, you know, get rid of these players just because, for instance, I'm not saying it is Worcester, but maybe Worcester can't afford theirs. I think that is perfectly okay.
The maths doesn't quite work out perfectly, but let's say there had been an overall reduction of the salary cap by 25%. It's actually slightly less than that, the reduction. But you could re-sign everyone on exactly the same deal, but only count 75% of their contract. So none of the players' salaries count, but then some clubs can operate within their means. But the bit that I don't get is you could do that anyway. As in, Worcester can spend £3 million on their salaries if they want and be sustainable. You don't have to put this loophole in to allow other clubs to
quite
fudge their way around it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The only counting 75% was meant to mitigate the fact that Steve Lansdowne has made some significant investment in players like Semi Radradra and Sale in Lou Diaga, etc. And that was meant to go, all right, well, yeah, we can't. It wouldn't be fair to stitch you up having just signed a deal with them. But to then take that, the intended mitigation of that, and use it as a loophole to get your entire squad 75% of what you're paying them counted as salary cap. If clubs have done that,
farcical. It's just from my side, it's not a good look.
But on the other hand, if you're a salary cap manager and I'm an owner, and you did not come to me with this solution, I would fire you.
Yeah, but then, as we've said before, and as I'm sure we'll say again, this is what happens when you have people setting their own rules and marking their own homework.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's hardly drawn up, isn't it? Because when you say, for instance, you can do X, Y, Z to help ABC, and someone looks at that and goes, how do we put this into our favour? Well, then, you know, you've got a loophole. And they probably drew up the rules with the best of intentions. But, you know, that's just what happens.
Yeah, it is what happens when you put big loopholes in there.
Yes, quite.
Did either of you see the other salary cap story this week from across the water?
Montpellier, yeah.
Yeah.
Disguising, it was the word I saw. Put some flesh on the bones. I don't know what happened.
So we're kind of aware of the detail. It's actually only a couple of weeks ago we were musing about whatever happened to Johan Usen. So yeah. In 2017, he was one of the highest paid players in the Pro 14. Top 14.
Yeah,
rightly so, because he's a very talented player, can play right across the back line. He can kick and can do a bit of everything. Anyway, he retired from one of the biggest contracts in the top 14 at Racing 92 to go and manage a cattle ranch in South Africa. It must be an incredible cattle ranch.
Sorry, can I just stop you there, Phil? Because or in the commercial world, the price of price of a pint of milk. And in fact, if you're ordering multiple crates of milk, you'd know the price directly, and you'd also audit it. So here's my question. If in your industry someone was on Johan Usen's salary, what kind of role would they have?
In a multi-billion pound construction company, you'd be talking CEO. Like, it'd be top dog. multi-billion pound construction company, that is.
Okay. So do you think then Johan Usen left the top 14 with all of his experience in agriculture to join a multi-billion pound agricultural firm as CEO?
At 24 or 25 years old.
Yeah.
it doesn't sound likely. And that appears to be what has been found out by the top 14 salary cap investigation that's been going on over the last few years.
You want hell of an investigation.
It does appear to be a hell of an investigation. And it's referencing unnamed bank accounts in Hong Kong and Switzerland, where funds have been transferred from party to party to party to make, to buy cattle at inflated prices.
No way.
For funds to then be pushed onto to Johan Usen is what's being alleged.
Now, has been milking it.
I bet the top 14's got beef with him now.
Come on, JB. Come on.
He's quite good at puns, so I feel awful. I mean, someone must rate him bloody highly to make him one of the highest paid... Well, Racing made him the highest paid player in France.
One of the highest paid players in France.
Which is high, which is very, very good, right? Someone else wanted to... Like, if there's a player who's already the highest paid player, in my opinion, it's not worth going after that player. There's an opportunity cost. You could probably get another one somewhere else, right? Okay, but they decided to do it. But not only did they decide to pay him more than what he was on his new contract in Racing, they also thought he was valuable enough to take him out of the game for a year, set up an elaborate system of inflated beef buying, and then bring him back after a year out of the game. I mean, they must really rate him, or this must be one of the most stupid stories in history.
It could be both.
I think both. Like both.
It really does, because everything you said is exactly right. And then one of the other things was in the report that I read, his alleged salary when he was back at Montpellier was only 15,000 euros, which is obviously not market rate for one of the top paid players in the league.
And also one of the world's best agriculture CEOs.
Wow. So, well. So France are at it as well.
This one, If there was any doubt over the intent behind the Saracens salary cap, and whichever side you're on, you either think Nigel Ray was masterminding it and doing it all deliberately, or you think he was just a bit naive. Whichever side you fall on that, there is almost, if those facts that I've read are correct, there is no, you can never give Altrad or whoever set this up as part of his organisation, you can never give them the benefit of the doubt with that series of events.
I know it's not a popular view, right? I just think, how much must these guys love the game? I mean, I love the game. I love it enough to sit down with you three and chat. I don't know if I love it enough to be funneling my own cash to these guys. I mean, they must really love it.
just in terms of the banking fees to set up like opaque faceless accounts in Hong Kong and Switzerland. I mean, Ultra might have them set up already, but just to use that those kind of facilities, that's got to be quite expensive, surely.
The potential damage to your reputation.
Yeah.
My goodness. Well, all of these stories, I think, are gonna run. So we will. I've no doubt revisit them. But in terms of rugby, I'm ashamed to say, I didn't watch either of the Aotearoa games this weekend.
This is why we had our pre-podcast meeting, right?
Tell me about the Crusaders, because I haven't seen them play. I've seen the other teams play.
Okay, I think very quick take on this: Crusaders second best team in the competition.
Really?
Behind the Blues.
I
mean, you know, that's obviously painting by numbers a little bit, because Blues have got two wins. I think that they're the only team with two wins. Looking at the Blues, and we'll come back to them in a second, I just like them, you know, more. They're more not rounded team. They seem to be playing a bit more of a muscular style. And there's quite a lot to like about the Crusaders. I particularly like some of the stuff they do in defence. On the other hand, maybe the Crusaders game and how they won it today had more to do with Hurricanes being absolutely not inept, but reckless.
Your beloved Canes. Phil, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't start particularly well, did it, JB? 30 seconds in, Hurricanes get a line out, miss the jumper, and less than a minute in, what a sensational try that was to start the game. I mean, that was some finish. Threw about 15 separate pairs of hands and they went 60 metres.
I saw the highlights of that. Yeah, that was awesome. Loads of forwards involved in that as well.
Yeah, because it worked back to the wing where the line-out had been. So it was a right mixed bag of who was involved in it, but some serious, serious skills on show. But all came from a Canes mistake.
I just think that the Canes as an organisation at the moment, the way that they're playing, they throw caution to the wind when, you know, there is no need to. Vince Arso did not need to throw that ball forward out the back door. And they've got wonderful attacking position. Whoever the winger was who decided that it was critical to offload in his own corner, about 5 meters out, to an oncoming Crusaders player. I mean, that was the easiest try I've ever seen. Easiest try. It's just absolute lunacy. And then there's things like their decision making. They decide to go for the corner. So I'll set the scene. There's a penalty. Canes look up, go for the corner. Don't quite execute too well. The ball comes down, they play it across the back line, something happens, another penalty. And a yellow card. The Canes don't back themselves again. So obviously they think the first penalty that he took was the wrong decision. Don't back themselves, go for the stick, score the 3 points. But they should have really backed themselves and gone for the other corner.
Yeah. And I mean, that leadership and decision-making, losing someone like Beauden Barrett and maybe not having the experienced decision maker as a fly half. So like Garden Batrop.
Yeah.
Who's been around for a few years but has never ever been the main man.
He's not the one telling Vince Arso to throw it out the back door.
No.
He actually might have. In fact, it might have actually been him that tried to keep the ball in. I can't remember. But the point is, it's something that's in the DNA of it. Maybe it's like the hangover from Chris Boyd, because they do like to play from all angles. But it's about weighing up the risk and knowing, can you do it? Not being completely and utterly reckless. And that's where I think Hurricanes really let themselves down.
And they were trying to do it against, like, your perception based on the 2 weeks, the second best team in the competition. I can tell you for the last 4 years, Crusaders have been by far the best team, not just in New Zealand, but they've been the best team in the whole competition.
Yeah, the only reason I say second best is because they've only been out there for one game.
Yeah.
And, if Hurricanes had tightened up, this is actually a much closer game than I'm giving it credit for. But But they did okay. I mean, they won. You can see like the basis of their defence. You can see the basis of their set piece a defence too. They're not bad, and they're one game in.
They're not bad. What about the Blues? Because the Blues for the last few years have been the worst team in New Zealand, and now they're looking class.
Yeah, I like them. I like them because, like I said before, they're much more reserved than the other teams. They tend to play more sort of pod-based, a runner with two support runners. They're far more comfortable making short yards than the other sides. That said, they do have quite a lot of talent, and when they turn it on, it looks pretty nice.
They've got some serious talent in the outside backs. Like, serious.
Your boy, Talaia.
The two young wingers, Talaia and Caleb Clark, are super. They're awesome. And then, obviously, Bodie coming through the middle, out the back. And Otay Black, as well, has looked brilliant these two games.
Was Bodie stepping in more again as a second distributor as well, stepping up into a playmaking role in attack too?
Yeah, did a bit of that. I mean, he gave the first... I don't know if you've seen their last try, Tim, which Bodie steps into playmaker. He's first receiver.
Yes, I have seen that.
And the guy who I thought was man of the match, Hoskins Sototu.
Sototu, yeah.
Who gives... He's playing second receiver. Hoskins Sototu is a 21-year-old number eight, whatever he is. He was playing second receiver. The pass he gives to Talaia on the
left-hand miss
arc,
two or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was an incredible pass. It was an absolutely... like inch perfect.
He's a baller, isn't he, that kid?
Yes, yeah. Sototu, and he was very good going forward. He was very good in defence. He's got a couple of key turnovers.
A try, an assist, a bunch of tackles, and some good carries.
He looked class. And I don't know whether he's being talked up for the number eight role in New Zealand, but then number eight for the last 9 years or so, Kieran Reid, retired after retired. He left Crusaders, went to Japan, presumably retiring, and won't be back for the All Blacks now, given his age. This boy, in a few years, could be really pushing for it.
Well, so Sam Kane's going to be the open side, and then you've got two spots in the back row. You'd think Hardy Surveyor is going to take one of them, so there's one back row spot available.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of options.
They do, but this boy looks good. Sototu, I like him.
Yeah, and you would have thought Odi Surveyor would be just a shoo-in for number eight now for until forever, really.
But the one downside that Odi Surveyor has, he's fairly lightweight for a number eight. I mean, Odi can do everything.
He's not lighter than 100 kgs.
No, but he might be like somewhere between 105 and 110 kgs,
which is basically the same size as this Sototu.
And then, and power is mass times acceleration, isn't it? And is that right, Phil? Is that the right equation?
It's height times gun width. Always has been. Always.
Force is mass times acceleration. Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
Force measured in newtons. That's what I remember. I remember a bit of physics from school as well. Yes. And Odi Surveyor makes up for any lack of mass with plenty more acceleration than your average back row.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He certainly does. So Ardy's listed on the All Blacks website as 99 kg.
See, he is lightweight then.
Yeah. He is. That is lightweight for number eight.
For any international back row, really.
Yeah, but he's good enough to get away with it. Like someone like Michael Hooper's probably about the same weight.
Oh, yeah, and eight. Well, yeah, but this goes to my... Actually, what was Odi Surveyor? So I always think of him as an eight. But was he a seven?
He's
across the back row.
Yeah, I think... So I think his primary position would probably be a seven. But he can play all three.
Yeah.
Because he's so dynamic, he's so quick, and he's so strong.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they had Tupolotu in the back row at times.
Hitchcock to a Bolotto. Yeah, he was at six.
I really like him just carrying and beating people up.
And he spoke really well after the game as well. It's like two good wins for the Blues with him captaining. that is good. Because he's been, I mean, we saw him in Chicago in 2014. He was in the wider squad then as a
You can't miss him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he didn't have the pink hair then.
No.
No, I meant just the sheer size of the man. He's enormous.
He is enormous. But it feels like he's been like round and about the All Blacks, but never been able to. He's got the physical attributes to break into the.
Like him and Fifita have kind of been on the fringes, never had an extended run.
Yeah. Veya Fifita, he got dropped unceremoniously a few years ago because there was a rumour that he had signed for Exeter Chiefs.
Oh, yeah.
But if he had signed like a pre-agreement, it never worked out and never came to anything. So he actually. Wow. He's had less All Black time than he probably should have done. And that's one of the rumours why.
I just want your opinion on this. Just changing the subject slightly. World class fly halves playing fullback. Now, is this just to make the team better or is there something more going on here? Is this going to be the future where we just see the best player? I always think your best player, your best back, you need hands on the ball more often or not. Okay, so as many times as you can get that player's hands on the ball, the more you do it, the more it benefits the team. That's generally what I think. And I think most people kind of agree with that. But maybe it's about having your best player, not with hands on the ball as many times as you can, but more as much time on the ball. Which is why they're moving Beauden Barrett and Damien McKenzie to 15. Because these two guys, I've seen them both play 10 for the All Blacks. Damien McKenzie's little cameo for the All Blacks at 10 was phenomenal, I thought. And yet here they are at 15. And arguably, both these lads could go over to France or the UK or anywhere really, get either a marquee spot or one of the top paid jobs in the entire game. And
They'd be on Johan Usun money if they went to France.
Farming money?
Exactly. Farming CEO money.
So here they are playing 15. I wonder if this is... It's more than just getting your best players on the park. It's about having your best players with more time on the ball. And then
are we seeing this anywhere else?
Yes, a little bit. And this is what I thought is Danny Cipriani. How often do you see him and other 10s being moved out of the first receiver slot? Because there's more space after the first phase. Maybe it's in some way linked to that, which is just get them out of the way so they don't have to do those little, the rubbishy little pop passes and give them more time elsewhere on the field.
I think Beauden has played 15 quite a bit before. It's not like a brand new move for him. I think DMAC as well. I imagine they're the kind of guys who all through age grades were put in 10 because they were the best player on the park, so they can play 10. But when it got to the better level, like I think Beauden played 15 in the... I'm sure Beauden was 15 and Anscombe was 10 in the under-20s World Cup in 2011, I want to say.
Yeah, Beauden won. Yeah, but then Beauden won World Player of the Year at 10.
He did.
So it's not a case of like... And there's someone who's much better. Now, you could argue with them the longer at 10, that, okay, we would rather have them both than one of them. So, the cost of having one means, the cost of not having one is too great. So we're just going to throw one of them at 15. I definitely can see that argument. But I just think with two of the most talented players maybe on the planet playing 15, there might be more to it.
But they're also, at that point in time, when Beauden was playing 10, you had Ben Smith as basically the best fullback in the world, or second best alongside Israel Folau.
Izzy Dagg was around when Beauden was still 10 as well.
He was. And so you had amazing options,
yeah.
But the fact that both of them, both Beauden and Damien McKenzie, they're quite similar in a lot of their attributes. So maybe that's a good thing because you've got two... They're not like-for-like replacements. They are different. But then Beauden and Damien McKenzie are more similar than, say, Beauden and Ben Smith or Beauden and Israel Dagg or Damien McKenzie and Israel Dagg.
Yeah. So
there's something in it.
It's much easier as well, isn't it, to move a fly half to fullback rather than move a fullback to fly half.
Most that is true.
I'd probably think more of it and read more into it if I thought that Beauden Barrett would have any issue going back to 10 after playing fullback. He could play the next 2 years at fullback and then step in a World Cup final at fly half for New Zealand and still boss it. I don't think it really matters.
As long as he's not kicking sticks.
Well, yeah, quite. Yeah, although, too right.
He did. He slotted a drop goal in this, didn't he?
Did he? I didn't see that.
Blues got a penalty late on, and he just bang took the three.
And he got one. And he got one last week as well.
Yeah, I did see some stats in. I can't remember the exact numbers, but there's been five drop goals in two games this year, and 2 years ago there were five drop goals in however many games there are in a normal 100 games for a normal Super Rugby season.
Drop goals back.
A quick shout out to my new favourite player, Adam Thompson, 38-year-old second row, 112 kilograms, still rocking it in Super Rugby. So I'll be following him closely because as long as he's playing, I'm not old.
So Thompson, he was in the 2011 squad, wasn't he? I want to say the World Cup squad in 2011.
One of the subs came on today, and when Adam Thompson started playing senior rugby, that sub was 3 years old.
Wow. But
the absolute boy, Adam Thompson. Shout out to him.
Yeah, I'm just looking at him now. So yeah, he played All Blacks until 2000. Yeah, member of the World Cup squad in 2011. I thought he was.
Good lad.
The best part about him, he looks 38. It's not. You're not confused to like what. You know, you're confused as to why he's there, but you're not confused about his age.
Right. A little change, but before I do, I just want to say something very exciting is coming. We'll have a date for you very soon, but we are definitely 100% can confirm now, as we mentioned at the end of the last podcast, we are going to be doing a Rugby World Cup classic match watch along, where we're going to be sat and looking at an old classic match, and we're going to want you to join us, leave your comments, watch it with us, and get a beer or Negroni, and come and join us. So I think that's going to be happening probably in the next 2 weeks. So keep your ears and eyes out for that. We'll give you more information, but it's one of our favourite World Cup matches. But it's definitely happening now. So we'll let you know exactly when, once we know. Right, okay. I'm just going to jump us away onto a different topic for a minute, because like the world's getting embroiled in a culture war. Unfortunately, rugby got mixed up in that, for better or worse, for right or wrong. Well, let's discuss that right now. Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, on the chopping block, being considered to maybe be a song that is stopped playing at Twickenham because it could be insensitive or offensive to some. So the RFU have said we should consider its usage. What do you think about that, JB?
I don't really care. It's quite a nice song. I quite enjoy it. I think it's quite a nice song. It's quite a stupid song. I think the movements are pretty stupid, but I quite enjoy it after a few beers. It's just not something which I think the authorities should be spending any amount of time on whatsoever. And I'll just make a further point, which is I kind of wish that all big organisations would come off Twitter, because I guess if they did, none of this would ever happen.
One thing I will say, that it was reported as it's being banned. Those headlines certainly are misleading.
Newspapers exaggerating headlines for clicks and reads, I don't believe it.
So the RFU are going to review it, which I don't feel particularly strongly either way. I don't love the song. I don't have huge passionate memories about it, and if not really, partly because it just doesn't stir something inside me in the same way that, say, the Fields of Athenry when you're in Dublin does. I'm not that passionate about the song. If people genuinely are upset and offended about it, I'd be disappointed and sorry to hear that. So let's let the RFU's review take its route, and we'll see what happens from that. part of me does think, though, in the middle of a global pandemic, when rugby is at its most precarious point that it's been at in years, there is talk of multiple clubs and institutions failing financially and players are taking huge pay cuts. It does feel a little bit like it's slightly misguided to spend any resources on that rather than thinking about how we can actually get back to normal. Yeah, back to normal. What? Players on full salaries and all the rest of it.
Once we're playing, once everyone's been paid, once you've unfurloughed your staff, once you've done all that stuff and you've solved all the problems, have a look at the songs.
Absolutely.
Well, this has come up because of a conversation about racism in society. It's linked with slavery and stuff. I don't think that even if it were banned from now on, I don't think that would help the cause in 2020 in any way, shape or form. But I think we'd all be agreed that if there's any way we can actually bring about a more equal and fair society, then those are the things we should change. I don't think this would make any difference whatsoever. However, I'm okay with the conversation being had. And I wasn't aware of the full background to the whole song. I've had a look into it. It strikes me not as a song that slaves used to sing. It was written by a freed slave after his emancipation and after the Civil War. It was sung at Woodstock. It was a gospel song adopted by the Oklahoma State. The guy was called Wallace Willis, died 1880. And I just imagine for a second, he might have a great-great-great-grandchild who, in Oklahoma, their parent might say that your great-great-grandfather wrote that song that 85,000 people in Twickenham are singing. It feels celebratory. All I'll say to finish is there are what some people who tried to ban it in the past, the Nazi Party in Germany.
Yeah, so good company to keep, guys. Well done.
Yeah, so maybe that's a really good point to the early one that perhaps there should be a review of this and we should be celebrating it, the rich history of the song and also the diverse England, UK and the team that we have at the moment.
I have to disagree. I have to disagree, right? I do not want to celebrate any song. I don't even like music that much. if there is a song and it's catchy, I will sing along to it. If it's not, it's not. I do not need to be educated about them. I do not need to know any more information about them. I don't want to celebrate them. I don't want to know who it's offensive to. I don't want to know any of that. I have no problems singing Stereophonics and the problematic relationship they have with burning down trees with matches. I don't want to know any of it. I don't care. So that.
Well, I won't tell you what that song was actually about.
Please don't. Please don't. Please don't.
It only takes a. There is a background to that story, and it's quite a dark. And funnily enough, it's quite a dark one. But yeah, that's.
But the background for me is that's what a little band used to sing just between the Millennium Stadium and the Cardiff Blues or Cardiff Blues Bar. People who've been to Cardiff will know exactly what I mean. And it was bloody brilliant. And that's the only thing I need to know about that song. I need to know nothing else. That's it.
I'll just echo what you just said at the end there, that actually the England rugby team is an example of a success story in terms of reaching out into the English communities. You've got some guys from poor areas. You've got some guys with no rugby background in their families of mixed race or whatever. Actually, maybe look at the positive. Let's try and amplify their voices in society a little bit more because they've got great stories to tell, opinions to have, and we can wave a flag rather than self-flagellate.
Sorry, I'll bite. Tell me about the Stereophonics song.
A Thousand Trees.
Go. Yeah, go on.
I don't know. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was written about... I believe, okay, I may be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was written about a football coach who was accused of some dodgy behaviour.
I think you're right, actually, because the whole point is it takes one match.
As in, he could get accused. He got an accusation and that's it. His life's over. And that was and so it was written at the time when he was accused, but it was believed that he didn't actually do these things. I think subsequent to the song being written, actually he was guilty and found guilty.
Really?
I may have that completely wrong.
Better. It's definitely not better, but it's better for the story, and that's what matters.
Yeah, I apologize if I've got any of that wrong. I apologize to Stereophonics more than anything. That's as I understand it, but I may be wrong.
Wow, that was an interesting term, which I never saw coming.
Yeah. There you go. Talking about amplifying voices, just a very, very quick one on Courtney Laws. If you weren't aware, he made a comment off the back of Marcus Rashford's work changing government policy, and gave another idea of how, as well as a short-term solution to a problem that's obviously dear to Courtney Laws' heart, just as it is to Marcus Rashford's. Courtney Laws suggested what he believed might be a long-term solution, was roundly vilified for it, cancelled, if you will, by a lot of very prominent rugby voices as well.
I've got to say, anyone who tweets at someone's sponsors or their employer, I don't even care what the situation is now, you're a scumbag. You're just a scumbag. You shouldn't do it. It's the worst behaviour possible. As for Courtney Laws, you know, I agree with him. I agree with almost everything he tweets, but that's besides the point. You either, you know, want your players to speak politically or you don't, and you can't just want some because they agree with you and some because they don't. I think Courtney Laws is, you know, brilliant. Simple as that.
Yeah, I think Courtney Laws is an intelligent man, and exactly, I'd just echo what you just said, JB. Actually, the whole point is, do we want to have robots who all say the same thing? You should be able to respectfully disagree with someone, and there seems to be an increasing number of voices, and unfortunately, from some quite prominent rugby positions that are getting increasingly illiberal and chucking names.
Don't care about the thing they pretend to care about. It's far more one-sided. You know, the fact Courtney is who he is and he has the views that he has is unacceptable to them. I think they probably see him as some sort of traitor more than anything else. No, I'm with you. I think Courtney always is a credit to the game. Massively happy to have him around.
Agreed. Right, let's move on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, here we go. Let's stick with Northampton, though, because they're going to be doing a Last Dance-style documentary.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Access All Areas.
Which, by the way, I tweeted about this. Who wants to watch Northampton? I mean, well-run, good squad.
Great shoes.
Yeah, good shoes. Everything about them is mundanely good. And particularly since I've got the new coaching staff in. They seem to have made all the right decisions continuously. That's pretty dull. Thankfully, we can link this back to Courtney Laws. Courtney Laws exists. So they have a reason to make this whole documentary.
but going back to what we already said about Courtney Laws, yes, they have a reason, but actually, he's not controversial. He's not like Scottie Pippen, is he? He's a family man with... who is a model professional, yeah, and has some perfectly reasonable views, and never really misbehaved, as far as I can tell.
We're going to have to watch, I don't know, half an hour to an hour every week about Northampton working really hard and being a good rugby team. I'm not sure that's what we want. I think we want to watch or Saracens, but hey, it's Leicester or say.
I'd love to see the Mike Ford presentations from Leicester.
Oh my word, Leicester would be bloody brilliant.
It'd be dynamite. Yeah.
And the head coach's office, and you can imagine walking down like a corridor, and there's going to be three different doors, and each one of them has head coach on the, you know, door. One's Jordan Murphy, one is Steve Borthwick's office, one is Mike Ford's office.
One final thing from Northampton, they've come up with an idea that they've said to fans, any fans that don't want a refund of the remaining part of their season ticket? Or is it anyone that buys a season ticket? It's one or the other. It's anyone that renews their season ticket. Anyone that renews their season ticket, I think, can have it. There'll be a special commemorative shirt which will have loads of fans' names printed on.
That's cool.
Which it's a cool idea. It also means Northampton are on the lookout for anyone who signs up as Hugh Jars and stuff like that.
So let's just go through some teams. So the boring teams to follow would be Northampton.
Yeah. Exeter. No, I don't know about Exeter, because I reckon that they're away in Devon. They're out of the gaze of most of those journalists. I reckon they get on it a lot, you know. I get the impression they get on the beers quite a bit.
But they're just boringly well. They're just boringly good.
Everyone's happy.
Yeah, everyone's happy. There's going to be no fireworks there. Who else is there who has been boringly good? I would say Gloucester, maybe. Maybe Bristol too now. Bristol might be that well-run club that there'll be no drama at. Everyone gets what they want.
But then Lamb's such a likeable, I think he's a father figure to a lot of the players. So I think there's a good dynamic from what I've seen in brief snippets, because Bristol's social stuff is really good. So I'd quite like to watch some of that.
Yeah, but look, I don't watch reality TV for inspiring stories. I want Colin. I want to be... I think the Saracens rebuild is obviously... I mean, imagine the cameras being in there this year.
You'd have one at Sale just based around Dimes.
Oh, my... A diamond, right? So, I mean, you know this because you interviewed the guy. And I would say he's probably, and you'll probably agree with this, the best interview of any of the DORs.
Well, I think you'd have to qualify what you mean exactly, but yeah, I'd say he can be the most box office memorable, entertaining for all types of different reasons, depending on the mood he's in. Absolutely, 100% on that. He's a great character for the game to have.
Yeah, I actually think, and he's so unorthodox. He's so different to all the other DORs. The danger is they only get to film when he's in the good mood.
Mm.
That's the only danger. But other than that, I can't think of a more compelling character to watch. I really
I do like the idea of the Leicester one, where it's just all falling apart. No one knows their role. Everyone thinks they've got the top role.
Yeah, everyone thinks they're in charge. To the point that like they're blowing whistles at different times and they're giving the exact same yet opposite instruction.
there's a good story at London Irish, potentially, as in they're not expected to do a lot. They've got a new ground, been through some trouble. There's a few redemption stories that you could focus on.
Quinns could be quite interesting as well.
Quinns, yeah.
That would be great. That would be Love Island-esque. Great. Right in the city. I mean, there's something about Quinns, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to their players or whatnot, but I think because of the wealth of the area and their status, I think you can develop a bit of an ego at Quinns. That's just an impression I get. I'm not saying the guys have got egos. I'm just saying it could be possible.
Yeah,
they'd be the best one. Yeah, but I think Quinns or Leicester would be the best two if either of them was coached by Steve Diamond.
What else is there? Romania have got a new rugby stadium. Have you seen it?
I saw this.
So it's really good. It looks really. Bear in mind, we went to Bucharest to watch an international match, and it was loads of fun, but it was not state of the art by any means.
So it is that ground that they're redeveloping. Yeah. Is that actual ground that they've redeveloped with new facilities around it? It looks great. It looks really good. From what I read, they're building it in like 6 months as well. So it's not a long project. I mean, 6 months to build a stadium is pretty speedy.
Could you do one in 6 months, Phil?
If it's a few thousand people, yep. Could we do a 50,000-seater stadium in 6 months? Depends how much money you've got.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? So I'm just looking now at some of these pictures. It does look rather cool.
It looks very cool. Yeah, that's great. We have to get back out there.
It's interesting. Just I'm not wanting to open up a previous conversation, but you know, when when there's a lot of effort being made by unions in the Six Nations to be seen to be inclusive and caring about discrimination and all these various things, but they don't particularly want to be that inclusive of other nations outside the Six Nations. They don't really want to, make sure there's less disparity in money going to Pacific Island nations when they come to town, or the money that they get. They don't particularly care about equality and these kind of values. They don't care about them in that circumstance.
Which, of course, would be a very hard-hitting argument to me if I cared about any of those things, which I don't. So, fine.
Dan Leo made a really interesting point. He said, what's going on in the world, if England Rugby really wanted to make a statement that they really cared about inequalities and some kind of rebalancing, maybe Tongan players getting more than £100 when they come to Twickenham in November.
This is Tonga's problem.
I understand.
This is not the problem of robbing Joe Marler of his match fee or cutting community coaches or any of those things. To pay Tongan players more money is not the answer.
I would say that it does tie in with what you said, which is there's a lot you can fix in rugby before you start fixing things which have no impact on the world of rugby.
Completely right. Completely right. I just wish Romania the best of luck with their stadium.
Yes, agreed. What else we got on our list, Phil? There's a bunch of really good stuff this week to talk up.
We've hit most of it. There's a couple of other things, just some player news. It was confirmed last week that Chris Robshaw is going to San Diego Legion.
Yeah.
So that's a
great move for a great man.
Good long-term move for Chris Robshaw.
Stay classy, Chris Robshaw.
Absolutely. Yep. He'll look great out there.
Is
it a two-year deal?
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's, 34, I want to say, about that. Yep. Good deal. And the other one, which apparently Rob Baxter inadvertently mentioned this, Newcastle Falcons young winger/fullback/kicker Josh Hodge, who, if either of you watched, Tim, I know you did, watched some of the under-20s World Cup last year, he was one of the top performers. He's a tall, very slim. He certainly was aged 18 or 19 back in that tournament last year.
Yeah.
But a very good runner, good distributor, and a phenomenal... I think he was 24 out of 24 kicks in the tournament, which is remarkable. And he didn't have Dan Parks doing the long-range difficult ones for him either.
What?
Yeah. And bearing in mind, the makeup of Exeter Chiefs back three, you've got guys like... Well, Alex Cuthbert's not actually that old, but you've got Jack Noel, who's has issues with artificial surfaces and is away with England a lot, when fit. Phil Dolman's coming towards the end. Stuart Hogg will be away a lot. Ollie Woodburn's getting older, approaching his 30s, or he might be 30 now. So that the age profile is kind of perfect for Exeter. He's, because their players are good and going to be away with England or international rugby, he's going to get opportunities, but... awesome. It's a great signing.
Great signing. There's always the flip side of the coin, though, and Newcastle will be very frustrated to lose him because they've also lost Adam Radwan, who's... I think he's Wasps. I think he's gone to Wasps.
Haven't Wasps signed the other winger from there as well?
Kibirigi went last season, didn't he?
Yeah. Lost Radwan. Yeah. So I am convinced, right, and... Wasps have actually denied it to me, but I'm convinced that Wasps' primary motive when signing players is speed. I am convinced of that. I think they've sort of unlocked the puzzle a little bit, which is, okay, instead of power, everyone we sign, particularly in the back division, has to have speed.
Well,
they've got a rapid back line now.
Yeah, well, Radwan is rapid.
He is, isn't he?
Seriously, seriously quick.
Well, they've had Kibirigi, they've had Radwan, and they've had Watson all off Newcastle.
Yeah.
I mean, potentially you might look at it and go, if you were smart, you might go, well, he's a good player, but also, not only is it a good player for our squad, it's one less from one of the teams. And if we are having financial issues, maybe if we nick from a team that could be down near the bottom, That could be a smart move. but what's fascinating about all these new signings is, and some others have joined Exeter. Nick White has left, and there was a couple of other. Oh, Johnny Gray's going to be for them. We're going to finish this season, assuming it goes ahead as planned, with all of the new players playing for their new clubs.
Oh, weird, eh?
Well, yeah, there's going to be a bit of fantasy rugby draft training to be done.
Oh, and who's leading fantasy rugby draft?
I don't know. I can't remember.
No, just on Radwan, I've just checked. So, he has. So according to this, he re-signed for Newcastle in January of this year.
Oh, great!
So that is good for Newcastle, albeit losing Hodge. So I'm sure I saw a rumor of him going to Wasps.
Might have been a rumor.
Yeah. Anyway, two-year deal from January for Radwan, which is. So that is good. That is, I guess it half compensates for losing Josh Hodge.
Sinotti and Radwan on the wings still. Pretty tidy.
Yeah.
God, Newcastle. Oh, yes.
That was the point. I've just seen his name, so it reminded me. Wonder how Alex Lazowski is feeling after getting out of the salary cap fire of Saracens into the salary cap frying pan of Montpellier.
Yeah.
And presumably, he wasn't one of the named players. Lazowski wasn't one of the named players who benefited from the Saracens deals. And so I presume he's not getting some of that sweet Altrad cattle money in Montpellier either.
Do you reckon everyone arrives at Montpellier training now in like a Stetson and cowboy boots and just hoping Altrad picks you to be the next form manager?
They better be arriving in like a 25-year-old Ford Fiesta because they're on 15 grand according to their official paperwork.
Incredible stuff.
Unreal. Oh, Maro Itoje looks like he's sticking with Saracens.
Yeah, interesting news that.
He doesn't need to do anything he doesn't want to.
No.
You're as powerful as Maro Itoje. If it works for you personally, just do whatever you want.
I'm still a bit disappointed for him that they couldn't make it work with Racing 92.
I mean, I've got to say, from a branding... that is disappointing. I guess everyone has thoughts about it because, of course, if his image rights do rise in popularity, he's not the only one that benefits from it.
Yep.
Hey, can't you, that every angle of this deal has been scrutinised to the nth degree. It mustn't be worth it.
Yeah, it will be stopping definitely England money and Lions money, and that's you can't do it. Not just Lions money, but Lions opportunity.
Well, Lions captaincy.
Yeah,
because favourite. I don't know who is.
It could be Owen Farrell, but
well, do you think he's got to captain England first?
Who, Marrow?
Or is it going to be like Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll?
It could be like that situation, yeah.
Yeah.
I would probably make Matt Rowe captain. He'd be pretty much the first name on the team sheet.
Owen's the first name on the team sheet, right? Hang on, Gatlin. So we don't know who the first name on the team sheet is.
We don't. I imagine Owen will also be one of the first names on the team sheet. But Marrow definitely will be.
It looks likely. Yeah, it looks very, very likely.
Hmm.
Unless, of course, playing in the Championship doesn't better any parsnips for Warren Gatland.
Possibly, but then he'll actually be fresher and fitter for England.
Yeah, I was going to say, England will probably see the best of him because his whole season will be, once they get, if the European Cup gets resumed, he'll focus on that. And then, bearing in mind what we said about potentially might have to go straight back-to-back seasons, which runs all the way through from August with a small break and then a whole season starting December, let's say. Actually, it's probably a good thing for the Lions and for England.
Yeah, it probably is that Mako, Billy, Jamie George, Marrow, Owen Farrell, that they're all just chill out a bit, guys. Play the games you need to in order to taper your fitness to be at peak for the England games and the Lions.
No, I think there are so many minefields to this line of thinking. On the face of it, it sounds brilliant, doesn't it? It sounds so good that the best players England can put out right now, with the lads you just listed, will be fit and fresh and firing. It sounds amazing. On the other hand, imagine if you're doing the hard yards in the Premiership week in, week out, and you're not getting that position because Owen's chilling out against bloody Isha somewhere. It sounds good on paper, but I don't think the reality is going to be nearly as good. There'll be some guys who are having undeniable performances that can't get in the England team. That's going to be bad.
Possibly, but I just think with those players in particular...
Those guys, they've got enough credit in the bank.
Exactly. They've got so much credit. There's so much game tape on all of those, and they're all in their prime.
Do you not think there's going to be resentment, though?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't think so for those guys.
No, those guys aren't going to...
There's not going to be... You're not going to... There's no player, however good... Like Joe Simmons, for example, isn't going to carry on playing amazingly well and think he's been cheated out of a position in the England squad if Owen Farrell starts.
I know people well. I don't mean him well, but you know, people in general. I'm just thinking about, you know, for instance, my two current podcast mates. And both of you guys in this situation would be furious and extremely competitive if you were playing week in, week out. And you weren't getting in the side. You'd be furious
if you thought you were better. But then, how many locks in the world at the moment think they are genuinely better than Mario Itoje? How many number eights in England think they're better than Billy?
I would say quite a few if they were winning the Premiership. They would back themselves. They all back themselves.
They all back themselves and they back their team. But there's there's a fine line between confidence and delusion.
Well, here's what I'll say. Any player that genuinely should be battling for one of those shirts that Elliot Daly or Owen Farrell or Jamie George or Maro Itoje might take in an England side, any player playing well enough that they might actually challenge for that jersey will get into an England squad, at which point Eddie Jones will have a good look at them, and it's not in Eddie Jones's interest to pick a favourite, because he needs to win games, and that's what he's there to do.
Yeah, and on Elliot Daly, I wouldn't class him in the same category as Maro, Mako, Billy, and Owen, and even potentially Jamie George is not as secure as those others.
Well, it's interesting because I didn't mention Mako because I don't think he's as secure as those others anymore.
Maybe you're right on Mako, and maybe even Billy. But Billy, the big question mark is how fit is he? Because when he's fit, he is brilliant. And there is no one in England who does what Billy does when he's fit.
Yeah, so we're already questioning him now. You know, after a year of not seeing them, outside, out of mind, if Exeter go on to win the European Cup next year, or, oh God, who would be the other teams that are... England going to have a bad European Cup next year, you got to think.
Yeah.
Not looking great.
I am actually like looking at this from a league perspective. It's a bit probably concerning for England because England have been very successful, England as a whole, in the European Cup for the last few years, primarily because of Saracens, when Saracens we now know were operating outside of the salary cap for an extended period. Mm. If everyone does legitimately operate within the salary cap, and not just within the salary cap, but within a 20% reduced salary cap, how competitive are they actually going to be against Leinster and against Toulouse and against Racing and Clermont? I'm not so sure. Maybe a few barren years for English rugby in terms of European Cup wins.
Awesome. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm.
Very.
Right, I think we've spoken enough.
Any other business?
I started a new job.
Congratulations. Do you want to do any plugs?
No, I would never plug the IFA practice, Beardmore & Co., which I've just moved to. As the name implies, it does involve me. But yeah, after 7 very happy years...
You've just moved to a company and already taken over enough that your name is front and centre. What? How have you managed this?
Great question. I won't tell you any more than that. But,
man of influence, that's all you need to know.
Influence Beardmore & Co. independent financial advisors, chartered financial planning practice. So yeah, after 7 good years in Oldham, I've decided to relocate. which is great. It's exactly what you should do during a pandemic, right, lads? Leave you.
Definitely. Definitely. 100%. If you're worried about job stability, you might as well quit and start a new one.
Well, yes. On the flip side, there are opportunities everywhere for the people that approach any given situation in the right mindset. Same as, and just to sort of have a positive spin on maybe the little ranty bit earlier, if you're listening and you really, really care about rugby's influence on society, there are rugby clubs up and down the land that would love your help. There are communities that would love your help. There's ideas. I sometimes think about little ideas, and now I've said it out loud. We need to get rugby into state schools. That might be a drum I start beating, because I don't want to be one of those people that just stands and moans about stuff. I love the game so much, I want to change. So,
well, do you know, I saw something weird today. I don't know why it was the case, but I went to a local rugby club, not the wonderful Tok H, Manchester's greatest club, but a different one. And I went to fly a kite with my daughter, and I looked at the rugby ground I was at, and the council had mowed. I don't know if it's like the council being arseholes or if there's a good pitch reason for doing this, but they'd mowed all the way around the playing fields except for the rugby pitches. They'd literally mowed the outline. It's like the inverse of what you should have done.
It might be because they reseeded them, and so they're letting...
completely overgrown with different bits of grass and thistles and whatnot.
Do most rugby clubs maintain their own feet, own pitches?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm wondering if, like, maybe the club... I don't know. I'm sure there's groundsmen out there. Well, it's a bit weird. Either it's been neglected or maybe they just want it in that way.
Well, they might use a different gauge mower on the pitches to the generic walking areas. So they might have done one day's job was to do all the outside stuff, and then they bring back the next gauge down and redo the pitches.
Yeah,
very Tok H's pitches are manicured, basically like the US Open's greens. I mean, that's what Tok H looks like at the moment.
In my back garden, I've ditched lawns. We've got artificial, and I'm all over it. So I'm in favour. I like 4G. I don't mind 4G pitches. I love 4G back gardens.
3G or 4G?
4G is the rubber crumb stuff.
As long as it's not 5G, because that's what causes coronavirus, right?
Exactly right. We don't want any more of that.
Good God, we covered some ground today. That's good.
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's wrap this up.
It actually felt like, you know, people talk, it feels like the world's getting back to kind of tiptoeing towards normal. That felt like almost like the most normal podcast. There were loads to talk about. We had a little rant and got upset, and
and then we moved on.
And we also had rugby to talk about. We're tiptoeing towards normal. Hit subscribe. Tell your mates. And keep your ears and eyes peeled. We'll give you all the information as soon as we get it very soon about the watch along on the World Rugby YouTube channel. JB, have a lovely week.
You too.
Phil, have a top week.
Thank you, Tim. You too.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that.
Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.